First, a mystery. The absence of things. And then the land, the sea. Out of nothingness, on a whim, a stir of air, scarcely more than breath. Grain by tumbling grain, the world forms before our eyes and may fade again.
We're standing on the shoreline of Bull Island, North Bull Island properly, but anybody who knows it and loves it intimately calls it Bull Island. And the most extraordinary thing about this island is that it wasn't here 200 years ago.
This, then this, and this. A lone crab scuttles between islands of stillness. Incredibly smooth, morning's newly washed up stones, like fresh eggs or fruit. The world at our feet, scraps of wood with flaking paint, dream cartographies.
It's about 5 kilometres long, a little bit more than a half a kilometre wide, and it's a C shape, like a cut nail, floating just off the coast of the shore in Dublin Bay, paralleling the coast. And it's an accident. It's one of those beautiful natural accidents. The building of the Bull Wall almost 200 years ago to encourage the tide to take away the sand from the mouth of Dublin Port had the unexpected, the unforeseen consequence of depositing all of that sand, which moves around in the bay, right here where we're standing. And it's a place that, as someone who lives nearby, I have been coming for years.
Salt wort breaks the wind and the grains accumulate. Thus, a dune begins. One for every year, the small beads of knotted wrack, calendars of air. When the Vikings came, there was nothing here. A breeze is the wind of change.
Approximately 7 years ago, almost exactly 7 years ago, I lost a very good friend and found myself doing what many of us do in a situation like that, just going for lonely, somewhat morose walks. And naturally, I came here. And it was a place I knew relatively well and had come to often, but now I was coming as a kind of a pilgrim, and I was retracing my footsteps every day and sometimes seeing the same people with the same dogs or the same children every day. And I just became very aware of my returns on each of those subsequent days being part of this little accumulative history, and that I was like not to put too fine a point on it, I was like one of the grains of sand that was just being blown the length of the island and then carried back and coming again the next day. So as somebody who writes, these little perceptions that I had coming here started to, like that, accumulate the way all of the individual sand grains accumulated, and they became a sequence of very short poems very short perceptions, haiku, which is a loose nod to a venerable Japanese tradition that has had a great effect on Western poets in the last century or more.
Riddle of the sands. Lugworms casting question marks linked by ampersands. As the tide retreats, plans are made, sand castles built. History repeats. Poor old Captain Bligh. Never guessed what was to come. Bounty, by and by.
I've been learning a lot about haiku in recent years. Not least since Professor Nobuaki Toshigi, or Nobi to his friends, has started to translate some of them back, as I can't help thinking of it, into Japanese.
So now we think that haiku is an independent poem, but it used to be a part of a long collaborative one. But particularly after the turn of the century, which is the from 19th to 20th century, there was this haiku poet who tried to modernize the haiku, whose name is Shiki Masaoka. So Shiki tried to make the opening stanza more independent than before. So this haiku is a standalone poem, 575 syllables, is a haiku.
First up, the skylark looking for the early worm. Whistle while you work. Small dogs running free, fitful, feigning, doubling back. The sea on its leash. Light-headed or not, hills of swaying marum grass, rooted to the spot.
And there are a number of definitions of haiku. I like this definition, which is done by mid-20th century literary critic, whose name is Kenkichi Yamamoto. And this definition is threefold. So yeah. Haiku is humorous, haiku is greeting, haiku improvises.
Your page will blow away now, I have to tell you.
I'm an academic and I need something to help me.
Okay, we'll have to get in out of the breeze here. We kind of needed that escape.
There are some don'ts in the haiku. You shouldn't express emotion in haiku. So the expression of emotion is left to the reader. Haiku shouldn't have to be sublime, yeah. Necessarily. The commonest things in commonest eyes, I think it makes a very good haiku.
The sky and the sea, and that faint line in between, drawn as if for me. Walking the mud flats, I pass a stranger, we nod, and leave it at that. As precise as words on a page, in the fresh mud, the language of birds. Things the sea gives up. Plastic, nappies, the handle of a china cup.
I remember one day, it's a number of years ago, waiting to cross the bridge, the
traffic lights regulate the crossing of the bridge. There's only enough space for cars to go in one direction and or pedestrians to go in one direction. And I looked down and at my feet there were leaves of cherry blossom, and that made the haiku, which was a kind of a little Japanese joke because of the Japanese interest in the cherry blossom.
Yeah.
And that was one of the first haiku where I knew that this was a sequence. The world's axis shifts from a garden in Clontarf. Cherry blossom drifts.
世界の軸は変化する。クロンターフの庭から外へ舞い出していく桜の花びら。
That process of trying to translate something like a haiku, which might have been spontaneous in one language. How do you go about the process?
This is difficult to answer, but the music is very important when you translate things, at, because if you cannot read it aloud, it doesn't work as a poem in Japanese. So the meaning is one thing, but the music is another. And when I tried to make my own music in my Japanese translation, 5 syllables is too short for a Japanese translation. But each of the poem is 3 lines, and I tried to decompose my own music, Japanese music, which corresponds to the English.
Look what we've just found. Something religions yearn for. The sky on the ground.
世の宗教が欲しがっていたものを僕たちはついに見つけた。ほらね、日潟に降り立った空。
When the sky turns red, the fish in the bucket stops and backs out again.
空がにわかに真っ赤になった。迫るバケツに魚はすくみ、次の瞬間、逃げを打つ。
Two boys with a kite made from twigs and plastic bags. Wind shrugs. Oh, all right.
ビニール袋と木の枝でタコを作ってきた少年に肩をすくめて、よし。という風。
If you listen really closely now, you can hear the sound of plastic kite tails in the wind. And of kids calling to each other to say, look, mommy, or look, daddy. And a bit further back towards the dunes, we're standing down at the water's edge. There are amusements of various kinds and a kite-making workshop. And the sky is full of these magical shapes, a huge gecko or lizard, yellow, orange and black, with big blue eyes, big bug eyes, and all sorts of shapes and forms of kites. And people from all over the city and from, by the sound of the voices, from all over the world, because today is the Dublin Kite Festival. It's been running 6, maybe 7 years, and it attracts a whole lot of people who come down with dogs and picnic hampers and everything else to celebrate nothing, really. Just the wind. And people stand out and let the wind whip their hair, knock over their ice creams, and lift their kites up into the sky.
Did you make those over in the workshop?
Did you?
They weren't even flying, they're just going.
Just spinning.
Yeah, hang on, hang on. We'll try this now, let's see.
They're flying.
They're flying.
Just... they're off.
Man in a canoe gliding past, his oar a brush, painting white on blue. sand dunes, then the sea, and beyond it, whales. Those peaks calling back to these. On a windy day, sand gets in your eyes, your teeth, makes grass of your hair. Jesus, he might be. That long-haired, kite-surfer dude walking on the sea. Human suffering. A child's balloon carried off, its long string dangling. In the swirl of tide, half a dozen see-through fish gliding side by side. Studying bird song on my iPhone while songbirds gamely sing along.
I discovered a few years ago a bird song app on my phone. And sometimes I come down and crouch into a corner of a dune and lie as quietly as I can and listen. I'm listening out for a lark now. Of course, because I'm listening out for one, they're not singing. They've gone very quiet, so I'll try the app. There's a kind of Morse code quality about birdsong. But there's one. I tend to hear it as the rhythm as much as the pitch, that dit 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 dit, and imagine trying to find something of that pattern afterwards with words, not to imitate the vocalization, if that's the word, but to imitate the patterns that they make. Oh, two beautiful dogs. Hey, 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 lads, hey, come here. Hello. How are you doing? How are you doing? Good day for it.
Yeah, isn't it?
There's a bit of a distraction there, if not a kind of a blessing from two passing dogs, and all the birds have gone quiet. But as soon as they're over the dune, it'll start up again. One of the big attractions is, in a place like this, is that you can be on your own. You might spot somebody over a dune, just the tip of a cap bobbing along, or the tail of a dog. But you could come down here day after day and meet no one, or nod to an occasional person. And that sense of being on your own, it's definitely important to an artist, to a writer, because you have to keep running things over and over and over and over again. Because what seems great the first time you think of it is often lame and hackneyed the fifth time you think of it. So repetition is maybe built in to the, you know, creative art, so to speak. But I think repetition is built into just being alive.
Glad we had this talk. Myself whispers to to himself. Never just a walk. Unseen things recoil when you lift a twig, a shell. The sand, rich as soil. Bivalves, mollusks, worms. Underfoot, deep in the mud, the wheel of life turns. When I was a boy, we drove out here once, these dunes like the ruins of Troy. It was our world then, us Midlander boys and girls, Islanders again. Dew damp, the long grass, balancing small globes of light, trembles as I pass. Smell that. Camping gas, fulfilling the primal dream. Beer, bun burgers, grass. Someone's had enough. Latest gangland victim or drunk, sleeping it off. Thus it comes to pass, bottle emptied. Back he goes to doze in the grass. The Bull Island Blues. Well, I woke up this morning, the sea got my shoes. Young lad on the phone. I've got other things to do. Stood there, skimming stones. A robin red breast settles on my toe. Can't breathe. Not yet. Not just yet. Small kids playing war, rifles raised in the long grass, bullets made of air. Slowly drifting by under sail, a fragile craft, one cloud in the sky. By my floating hand, pushing head down through the waves, beetle in the sand. Bee orchid, I know you're here somewhere, but it's late. Soon I'll have to go. Alien attack, shoals of jellyfish washed up. The Empire strikes back. Dracula himself, the cormorant drying off, great black wings outspread.
I like this seal poem. And when I translate this into Japanese, I think it works in meaning and in musicality. It works to the Japanese reader.
Seal's head in the sea, like a passing astronaut. And his eye on me.
海にぽっかりアザラシの頭、通過していく宇宙飛行士の目がこちらをじーっと見つめている。The image and the meaning of the poem, we the Japanese understand 100%. We can share the meaning, and we can share.The music in this particular haiku. This is very traditional haiku.
Okay. Picking through the scraps, magpies think they own the beach. Till a toddler claps. Holding there so still the kestrel, out of this world, then in for the kill. Waves themselves, their wings flashing silver when they turn as one, the starlings. Evening, an old crow. Who said magpies have sole rights on loss and sorrow? Just about alive, in staggered V formation, the Brent geese arrive.
Ricky Whelan, we're here on the causeway to Bull Island, between civilization and the great unknown. And who better than someone from Birdwatch Ireland to explain to us what it is we're looking at?
Either side of us, we can see two areas of very special habitats for the birds here in Dublin. One we refer to as South Lagoon and the other is North Lagoon. And we're actually looking into North Lagoon now. And to our sort of right, or east of us, is Bull Island itself, and we can see a golf course. And then we're looking out over a salt marsh and tidal mudflats, which is a very, very important feeding and roosting site for hundreds and thousands of birds each winter here.
And when people say about, you know, Bull Island being a magnet, if you like, for birds, is this the area that they're really coming for?
Yeah, so really birds need two things. Is they need shelter and they need food. And Bull Island provides both of those things. So the actual physical mass of the island protects us from the sea, the Irish Sea, and the storms and the weather that comes with that. And on the landward side of the island is these tidal mudflats that provide all these lovely, tasty invertebrates and little creepy crawlies for all the water birds that come here each winter. So it's basically a larder and a protected area for them. So it's ideal.
I'm not much of a bird watcher, really. I'm more a bird watcher. And I like when I come up here for a walk, with or without a dog, to see the line of, at special times of the year, the line of people here concentrated like Galileo with their telescopes. And half the time I don't really know what they're looking for. What are you looking at or for?
Sometimes there are rare birds that show up here and they could be blown off course on their way migrating somewhere and they end up here, and it's something very, very special. And you will get a load of twitchers, which are people who just go around travelling looking for exotic
twitchers.
Birds.
Twitchers,
yeah, that's the term for those guys. But normally, I mean, on any given day, there is probably in the winter up to 40, 50 species. The ducks like to dabble where the water is still sort of, the tide is still in. And then the waders are sort of wading around in the mud, hence the name, looking for sort of shellfish and little worms and bivalves and all those things. And you move up then into the salt marsh where the Brent geese, everyone's favourite, are feeding on the zostra, which is the eelgrass, which is a very specialised plant that they feed on, that they need, and that's why they visit Bull Island.
That's why they come here, and they're the birds that are in a way synonymous with Bull Island, aren't they?
Yes.
And
so
much of the East Coast.
Yeah, they're synonymous with Bull Island and Dublin because they've habituated to spending their life amongst humans. They've habituated, they come here essentially for the same protection that the island offers, and there's eelgrass, which is these lovely lawns of this filamentous grass plant that they hoover up like cows do grass. Yeah. And they munch that, and when they finish munching that, they literally deplete it all in the salt marsh, and then they have to move on to our parks and pitches to eat normal grass. But the normal grass isn't actually great for them. It's more like fast food. It doesn't put enough fat on them to get them back up to Canada to breed. So they need a zostra to pack
on. So when you say
pounds.
The normal grass, it's like the football pitches
literally,
in all the outlying
yeah.
areas here, including where I live, just over, on a particular morning is covered in Brent geese.
Yeah.
It's like a carpet.
So what's happened there, you'll never see that early in the season. So the first Brent geese arrive to Strangford Lock around the end of August. It takes them a couple of weeks to a few months to filter down the east coast. And then we start seeing them in Dublin. You will start seeing them in small numbers in August and in September. But really it's the end of September into October where the numbers really build. And they will feed on the zostra. And that's to get them back in good condition. Recover from migration because it's a big impact on their bodies. Feed up on the zostra, get really good condition. And then when that runs out, back onto the parks and pitches, keep the condition on to get you back up to Arctic Canada next year.
Brent geese, hooded crows, curlews, godwits, sanderlings, lengthening shadows. The killer's technique. Herring gull plays cool, a crab struggling in its beak.
And the few we can hear there now, just about, listen.
Yeah.
Just about in the distance. What are they?
What we can mostly hear at the moment is sand martins. And they've joined us here from Africa as well, where they've spent the winter and have come up to Ireland for the summer to breed. And they're basically chasing the endless summer around the globe. And they follow the insect populations and they feed up and feed their chicks on those before returning back to Africa, where there's plenty of insect food there for the winter. There's also swifts here, which have come up from the Congo Basin. Amazing life history. Those birds only land to actually nest. And so they spend their entire life on the wing until they land to have to rear their young. So some birds, they say, can be on the wing for 2 or 3 years. It's really amazing. What we can see here, we're in the middle of summer now in Bull Island. There's lots of gulls here. So these will be gulls that will be nesting on rooftops in the city and stealing your chips and all that sort of thing. Okay. And out on islands like Ireland's Eye and Haut Head and down in Dalkey. And they will come here to feed and roost during the day before returning back to the chicks. With food or whatever during the day. So lots of gulls still here at the minute, some waders, but at the moment most of the ducks, all the ducks are up in Siberia and places. Our oyster catchers are in Scotland, our red shanks are up in Iceland, and the brent goose are still over in Arctic Canada. So we're waiting for those to arrive, and the ones we see arriving back first are youngsters and failed breeders and non-breeders. They come back because there's no reason to stick around because they've got no chicks to rear. And then after that, sort of come late summer going into August and September, we really see the birds numbers doubling in sort of thousands each month, and they peak around December, January. You see this guy here?
Yeah.
See him swimming around there?
Yeah.
That's a swift.
Yeah.
So that's the guy that doesn't land.
Let the day recur. To the watercolorist, everything's a blur. Turning in circles, the L driver learning to credit miracles. Eating fish and chips, two old sisters gently dab ketchup from their lips. Power walking past, ladies of uncertain age. The years go so fast. Old man in his car, staring out to sea, Tosca singing from the heart. When my best friend died, I came here and sat for hours. The gulls cried. They cried.
Down here at the most northerly tip, the Hoth end of the island, Sutton Creek, here everything is hard and sharp and resistant, crunchy underfoot. It's all the shells that the sweep of the tide in the bay deposits here day after day after day. Layering shell upon shell upon shell. And only a few minutes walk back down Dollymount Strand, back down the beach. And that texture is completely gone and it's just sand. And they seem like two totally different things, two totally different substances. But in fact, they're almost the same thing. If you look at the sand, if you zoom in on the sand and you let it run through your fingers, you see all the colours, all the quality, all the texture of those shells before the erosion, the breakdown And you see that the difference between the two is just time. It might take a half an hour or 40 minutes to walk from one end of the island to the other. But there's decades between here and a few yards further back where they'll all be ground down to sand. And then the marram grass will stretch underneath them and then flower up through them and bind them into the island. And that's time as well. And I think that's the thing you notice most. When you come back to a place over and over, you remember the last time you were here and the time before that and 10 times before that. And you become very aware of time. And in a strange way, you escape time.
Even as we sleep, the island grows. Pause here now, your eyes closed, and dream. Dream it starts again, a first, a second, a third breath, the countless following. Dream the sands alive, moving, shifting, never still, the grains multiply. Dream that you are dead. Flash of darkness, the kestrel passing overhead. Nights you cannot sleep, imagine yourself out here, walking in bare feet. Shells and dust of shells. Evolution got it right. No us without them. Tattoo of small wings, shudder of grass stalks, grass heads, and then the settling. The metal handrail whistles as the breeze picks up, hard to pull away. A cell phone ringing, a gull screeching overhead, no one answering. What is it we say with this sweep of light or words? We are here today. Marram grass is tough. Sometimes that is everything, and still not enough. Nothing stays the same from one minute to the next. New life stakes its claim. They lead to nothing, the steps at the bathing hut. Then the tide comes in. Any morning now, the first tender buds will show, pushing clear somehow. On the wooden bench, last night's frost starting to melt. Almost time for lunch. Maps of worlds like this, when they're drawn, where we stand now doesn't yet exist. Taxi driver sat on the bonnet of his car, steam cloud from his flask. You ask, are you free? We are all born free, he says, turning from the sea. Then it's home again. Stars like grains of sand. The sky tide-washed overhead.
Bull Island Haiku was written and presented by Pat Boren and featured poetry from his collection Waveforms, Bull Island Haiku, which is published by Daedalus Press. Our thanks to Professor Nobuaki Toshigi and Ricky Whelan of Birdwatch Ireland who took part in the programme. The programme was produced by Claire Cunningham and sound supervision was by Tin Pot Productions. It's a Rockfinch production for RTE Lyric FM. The production coordinator was Peter Curtin.